is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We play a whole bunch here, and that's where I started scratching my head, man. Maybe we didn't play it enough, you know, and I wasn't a basketball coach. I was just being a drill meister.
Ryan Larson is the women's basketball associate head coach at the University of Wyoming. Larson just completed his fourth season on the Cowgirls staff, helping the team reach the NCAA tournament in 2021. Prior to arriving in Laramie, Larson spent 6 seasons as the head women's coach at South Dakota School of Mines. Larson became the head coach of the Hard Rockers after serving 5 years as an assistant women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Before his time at South Dakota, Larson was a member of the Augustana College men's basketball staff from 2002 to 2007. And from 1999 to 2002, Larson coached at Minnesota State Moorhead.
Hey, Hoopheads. This April, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines, too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dan Evans, head men's basketball coach at the University of North Georgia, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Have a notebook handy as you listen to this episode with Ryan Larson, the Women's Basketball Associate Head Coach at the University of Wyoming. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel, who is almost done with his Disney World vacation with his wife and 4 children under the age of 8, which, as I've said multiple times, I'm not sure how much of a vacation that is. But nonetheless, we're here with Ryan Larson, the associate head coach of the women's basketball program at the University of Wyoming. Ryan, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate this. This is outstanding.
We are thrilled to be able to have you on and looking forward to learning more about you and all the things that you've been able to do in your basketball career. Let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game, what you remember from being very young.
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, these are true stories. You know, probably nobody knows these stories other than, you know, probably my wife, my parents, you know, my siblings maybe because they witnessed it. But, you know, I was the kid that, hammered up boxes on the wall, you know, and shot hoops. Always had that make-believe opponent, you know, like a lot of kids do. But I guess, you know, really kind of where I figured out I wanted to coach was, you know, I thought I was some mastermind when I was down there in the basement, you know, shooting on the box hoop of, you know, I was thinking of 2-3 zones and, you know, set offensive plays, you know, and stuff like that. You know, I thought I was, you know, the innovator of those things until, you know, I got smart enough and actually played organized basketball that, you know, there were such things as zone defenses and set plays and stuff like that. And you know, that is really, that's the truth there. You know, as I played organized basketball, I, you know, learned I was pretty competitive, you know, and even back then I remember, you know, I hated losing more than I liked winning. And I don't know if that's a good trait for a young kid to have. Proud to say I've since got a little bit better with that, but you know, but also I was the kid growing up in, you know, the '80s and in, you know, high school in the '90s where, did everything back then, you know, played football, played baseball, played basketball, obviously, golf, you know, tried 1 year of track and figured out that I wasn't fast, and couldn't jump very high. So I, you know, gave that up, and I sure as heck wasn't going to run farther than a mile, you know, so I gave that up quickly, but, you know, enjoyed all sports. And, you know, just was encouraged to do all of it. And that, I think that, you know, ultimately helped me down the road with, you know, my coaching career as well, you know, enjoying all aspects of coaching in different sports and, you know, still use, you know, different watch football and think basketball, you know, stuff like that. Talk to wrestling coaches and tennis coaches here at Wyoming and relate that to basketball. So I really think my childhood, you know, being competitive and, you know, stuff like that has shaped me pretty well for my career.
So you knew from an early age that you wanted to coach, because I think what we found, Ryan, is on the pod after talking to a bunch of people that there's really sort of two ways that people kind of find their way into the coaching profession. One is somebody who, it sounds like you're of this mindset that you knew from the time you were little, you're drawing up plays, you're in your basement on the box hoop trying to figure stuff out. And there's that school. And then the other group is the group that maybe is playing and they get done with their high school career or their college career, or they have an injury and all of a sudden the game is kind of taken away from them, so to speak, as a player. And then they're like, wow, I got to figure out a way to stay involved in this game. Maybe coaching is the way for me to be able to do that. And so people sometimes come to it that way. But it sounds like you knew pretty much from an early age that coaching was going to be on your radar. When you went to school, was the idea that you were going to be a coach, or at that point, had you kind of thought, well, maybe I'm going to get a real job, or just what was your mindset like as you went into college?
Yeah, no, I knew I wanted to coach. You know, my whole goal in life for the longest time up until, you know, probably, my junior, senior year of college was, you know, I wanted to be a high school coach, you know, basketball, do a little football in the fall, you know, be a third base coach in the spring for baseball, you know, that, you know, and teach history and geography. And I, you know, that was my goal in life, was to, you know, just teach and coach. But very, very fortunate to, you know, be surrounded with people at the right time to give me opportunities to stay in the college game, to coach in college, and been, you know, very fortunate to, you know, stay in it as long as I have, because, you know, I never take for granted how hard it is to be in college athletics. You know, it's very competitive, and it's hard to stay in, and, you know, not just from, you know, retaining a job and keeping a job and getting a job, but, you know, the mental aspect of it as well, you know, that gets a lot of people out of it a lot, obviously, as you guys know as well. But yeah, to answer your question, as long as I can remember, that's what I wanted to do, was coach. And, you know, like I said, probably my junior, senior year, maybe as early as my sophomore year, you know, I kind of maybe thought, well, this college thing's pretty sweet. You know, maybe that if I could make a run at this, even better. And I probably really made that decision that I want to be in college coach when I, you know, was doing my student teaching, for sure. Yeah.
So was that about being able to do basketball all day and not have to be in the classroom? Was that the main driver of that?
Yeah, you know, it's just I wouldn't say not so much against teaching, you know.
Right. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. But obviously, yeah, you know, when you teach, you still have to put pants on every once in a while. You know, when you coach, you know, you put pants on for a game, and, you know, most of the time it's just, you know, you're wearing sweats and shorts to the office. I figured out that when you actually get to study a game for a living, you know, and be in the gym and being around young kids and passing and shooting, yeah, that's where it's at 100%.
And the outfit's a huge part of it, man. Trust me. So I got to tell you a quick, I got to tell you a quick story. So the beginning part of my teaching career, I taught in the classroom. And about 10 years ago, I had an opportunity to move from the classroom and teach elementary PE. So now I go to work every day and I wear sweats or I wear shorts and a t-shirt and I wear tennis shoes. So I always laugh and tell my wife that it's like I'm dressing again like I'm 14 years old. I get to spend all my money on tennis shoes and cool t-shirts and nice sweatpants and all the stuff that I liked to spend money on when I was a kid. And it's one of those things that I remember at some point telling my dad when I was younger, I'm like, you know, I just want to be one of those people. I never want to put on a suit and go to work. I want to be able to just, you know, do bad. And I never even thought, honestly, like I was one of those people that never, I mean, I played, but I never really thought at all that I would ever coach. Just never, it just never crossed my mind. And now here I am where, I mean, I'm almost never in a pair of pants or a dress shirt anymore. I got a closet full of them, but I never put them on. I'm always in shorts or whatever. So it's a pretty good life. I can completely relate. I relate.
Yeah, absolutely. What'd you teach before PE then?
So I was an elementary school teacher. So I started my career teaching third grade, which I taught for 4 years. And then
you're a saint.
Yeah. And then I went to fifth grade and I taught fifth grade for, I think, 14 or 15 years. And now I've been in the gym. I think this is my 10th year of being an elementary phys ed teacher. So yeah, it's,
That's awesome.
Being a phys ed teacher gave me a whole new lease on life. I don't know if I would have made it in the classroom to this point. I'm not sure.
See, I was thinking differently. So I originally thought I wanted to teach PE.
Okay.
And then I kind of switched. I'm like, you know what, man, I love badminton. You know, I love being in the gym, all that stuff. But I kind of figured out, you know, history and geography, I could see myself teaching that day in and day out.
For sure.
I bet with I would have been much, you know, very similar to you where, as much as I love teaching history and geography, you know, I would have ended back up in the gym. Like,
there's pieces of that. Don't get me wrong. There's pieces of the teaching aspect of it in terms of being a classroom teacher. There's certainly elements of it that I miss. Although, honestly, my favorite part of being a classroom teacher was sort of the sideline discussions that you'd sometimes get into where you'd be teaching one lesson and then something would come up and all of a sudden we'd be talking about whatever for 45 minutes. That was honestly always my favorite part of teaching because it's sort of a way where you kind of got off the curriculum, so to speak, and you just were having conversations with kids. And that's kind of what I always loved about a classroom teacher was when you'd get those opportunities where kids would ask you something that maybe it was tangentially related to the lesson that you were teaching, but for whatever reason, it was something that that kid wanted to know about or that the class was interested in, and all of a sudden you'd be having these sort of real life discussions. And that was what one of the things that I really always enjoyed about teaching. But going into the gym
really
was
cool.
Super fun. Yeah. It is. It really was. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Engaging those kids and having just different types of conversations. And I bet that'd be – I could see how you'd miss that. That's pretty cool.
And it's funny just how, again, your life sort of goes in certain directions and think about just – forks in the road and how things could have been differently. So when I graduated from college, the year I graduated was 1992. And that year was the year that the NCAA cut all the Division I staffs from two GAs down to one. And at that time, like I sent out seriously probably 250 letters that I printed out on a dot matrix printer with the Tandy TRS-80 computer that my roommate had in our apartment. And I heard back from lots of coaches just saying, hey, you know, we'd love to have you, but we just don't have a job because everybody had those guys staggered. So one guy would come and the next guy would leave. And so basically everybody had somebody coming back for a year. And I probably could have waited and maybe gone and tried again in a year. But by that point, I had kind of moved on. I had a business degree. I was at home trying to figure out what I was going to do and ended up going back to school. And so, you know, who knows if it hadn't been that rule had come in, I might have been coaching in college and gone a whole different route. So it's just funny how life works.
Have you heard this statement or had this conversation that, you know, I've had this talk with a lot of my friends that getting your GA job is the hardest job you can get. Have you heard of that?
No, I hadn't heard anybody say that, but it's not surprising.
It's true. And it's getting harder now from what I understand, you know, for a lot of different reasons and probably a different topic. But
well, you can only imagine just the number of people that want to get into it. I mean, I think when you look at just every level of college basketball, when you think about from Division I all the way down to NAI, Division III, JUCO, whatever, there's just so many people that are out there that want to stay in the game and want to get involved in college coaching. And of course, I think there's also, and this is one of the things that we've really tried to hit on a lot, is trying to help people to understand that the path is not an easy path. I think a lot of people sometimes have a perception as a young person, and especially if you're a young person who's played the game, that it's super easy. Like, oh, I played and you know this and boom, and all of a sudden I'm going to have this job and I'm going to be shooting up the ladder as fast as I possibly can. And so you and I both know that that's not really the way that it works. It takes a lot of time. You got to pay a lot of dues. You got to be willing to go lots of different places in the country. You got to work for nothing or next to nothing. And even then, there's no guarantee of success. And you just have to, you have to love what you're doing. I think that's the message that's come across to me loud and clear with everybody that we've talked to is, man, I loved my first year or two where I was making nothing and I was living in somebody's basement and I was having to bartend at night to be able to make money, or I was working at the Kinko's or whatever, just to be able to make ends meet. And, you know, a lot of people look back on that time fondly, for sure.
Yeah. And you can throw me into that club. I mean, yeah, some of my fondest memories, and, you know, that kind of goes back to, you gotta be resilient, you know, man, that, you know, I got at Augustana College, now Augustana University, where I did my grad work. You know, I got lucky that somehow, some way, they needed someone to teach racquetball, you know.
Nice.
And I did it. And, you know, I think that got me, you know, an extra $300 to $500 a semester, you know. And that, you can make that stretch a long, long ways, you know. And then, yeah, I was pouring beer and waiting tables at the Central Valley Country Club, you know. Part of that was for the tips in cash, but, you know, mostly for the free golf that they allowed me to play. But, you know, that's the resilience part of, you know, you could have been like, man, it's too hard, you know, for, I don't see the benefits of, you know, me working as hard as I am and making no money in hopes of getting another job after your GA job, you know. There's nothing guaranteed there, for sure. And then again, it's just being around the right people, right time. And I, you know, I've been, you know, the basketball gods have certainly blessed me with those two things, for sure. Yeah.
All right. So talk a little bit of how you got to Augustana after you graduated from MSU Moorhead.
Yeah. The guy that got me really started in the game, you know, Mike Olson, he was at Black Hill State at the time. And, you know, I was a good player, Mike, but not a great player. You know, I was a good athlete, but not a great athlete. You know, I'm a 5'11 average athlete, that, you know, pretty good jump shot with a good IQ. And not a whole lot going on.
That's a good combination, though. That'll take you a lot farther than a lot of people think it will.
It has for, you know, noon ball. You know, I've been pretty good there.
Nice. But, there you go.
The guy that got me into the game, you know, he gave me an opportunity to walk on at Black Hill State, and did, you know, got a chance there, you know, never dressed or anything like that, but, you know, played. But he knew I wanted to get into coaching, and he offered me a manager job when I was at Black Hill State, just knowing I wanted to coach. And he's like, hey, you know, you can play, you know, maybe I'll get you into a game, you know, maybe. And we were good then too. I mean, when I was there, we made it to, you know, three straight NAIA national tournaments, you know. So, I mean, there was really good players there at the time. And that's what he meant by maybe I'll get you into a game. But, you know, we still talk and communicate to this day. He's, you know, just a great mentor of mine and, you know, tremendous friend. I still give him crap. I'm like, was I really that bad, or did you, you know, see something and want to be a coach?
That's funny.
Yeah, we tease each other a lot there. But, you know, he, from Black Hill State, he got a Division II job at, you know, Minnesota State Moorhead and asked me to join him there. That's kind of really kick-started my career, where, I went to MSU Moorhead, stayed his manager, was able to work full time for a couple of years for him there. Searching for that grad assistant's job. But one of the guys I played with at Black Hills State was the women's assistant at Augustana. And obviously Coach Olson knew the head coach at Augie at the time. But that was, I always go back to, having good relationships to help you out get a job, And one of my best friends to this day, Travis Trapping, and write that name down. He'd be a good guest for you on your podcast. He's a tremendous basketball mind and a great story. But he was the assistant at Augustana College on the women's side. Obviously, I was on the men's side then. And he, was very influential with the men's staff at Augustana to get me that grad assistant's job there, just to continue to stay in the game and keep living the dream.
What do you remember about balancing your responsibilities as a coach with obviously going to school and then trying to earn some maybe money on the side? Just what were those years like for you as a GA?
Try to make a joke out of this because you're an educator, but at that point, education really came secondary for me. it really did, and the people I worked for there, we're kind of had the same frame of mind. We were able to go to class, stuff like that, but your work came first in the office and on the court, and getting to go out on the road and recruit. I couldn't answer that question honestly, because I don't remember studying a whole lot and getting my work done, academically a whole lot at that time, even though somehow I was probably a better student in grad school than I was undergrad. I think that a lot has to do with something that I, with a bachelor's in education, I really enjoyed what I was studying. So that helped a bunch, but a lot of long hours, a lot of late nights. I do know that, but there wasn't much of a balance. It was more so the job of basketball, and education came, Man, it probably wasn't second. It was probably closer to third or fourth. Yeah.
What do you take away from that experience as a GA that you think is still influencing you today as a coach?
I'm a big believer in that. I mean, there's just no job too small for anybody. When I was a head coach at South Dakota Mines, I made a point to, sweep the floor. Part of that was going back to, education background. And again, speaking to an educator, one of your main jobs is to make sure that, your classroom is safe. And I wanted a clean floor. But probably the bigger lesson there is I wanted, the women that I was coaching to know, hey, geez, Ryan can sweep the floor. I can be selfless in a lot of areas too. A lot of that with the way I was raised as well, clean your own car, wash your own car, that type of stuff. But that was certainly a big lesson as a GA where, even though you're low man on the totem pole, you really make that office go, all right, by folding mail outs, the letters that you've snail mailed back in the day to a few hundred recruits, licking the envelopes, stuff like that. Driving camp brochures to, Viborg, South Dakota, try and get as many campers to your day camps that you could, just on and on and on, minute details of no job is too small that makes a team really good, in a program really good. And those are good lessons, humbling lessons that, I really hold true and dear to my heart to this day, because this profession will humble you in a hurry, and if it could be taken away from you really quick, and so you better give back and pay it forward a little bit.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt that. You got to put that time in. You got to work, and the more work you put in,
the more likely you are to have success. But obviously, success isn't guaranteed in any way, shape, or form. You mentioned some of the things that you had an opportunity to do at Augustana. And I know that depending upon what level coaches start their career at, there's varying degrees of responsibilities and things that you get to have your hands in. But I think one of the things universally that coaches have said to us on the pod is that as much as they expected to be doing basketball as a basketball coach, that there's so many things outside of basketball that have to be done and have to be taken care of in order for a program to be successful. So this isn't a question maybe specific to Augustana, but just thinking about your career in total, are there some things that are outside of the purview of the basketball court, the X's and O's, that are required for a program to be successful? Some things that you enjoy doing that are off the floor stuff that maybe you wouldn't have thought you would have liked, but things that you enjoy doing more than maybe you would have guessed that are non-basketball related, if that question makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I do. And I'm not going to try to get off topic here, but I like the conversation. Again, I have this with my friends a lot, and, you know, even with people I don't know much about coaching, but, you know, basketball is such a small percentage of what we do, you know, and I'd like to almost put a poll out there to figure out what that is, you know. So when you actually get on the court and work with your team and your players and stuff like that, it's a joy. I probably a little bit different as I get older. And one thing I really enjoy now at the, you know, my 45 years of age is, here at Wyoming, they have a golf tournament series in the summer called the Cowboy Joe Golf Series, you know, and I, as much as I love to golf, but I love meeting boosters and fans and stuff like that. You know, I think that's just something that's come, I've gotten better at with age, but enjoying being around people more, you know, a lot of it has to do with the great people here in the state of Wyoming and our great fans of Wyoming athletics. I really enjoy that. I enjoy speaking engagements now, you know. 20 years ago, you asked me to be on a podcast. I'd do it, you know, for professional reasons, but I'd probably just be, you know, that stick in the mud profession guy, you know, totally PC and stuff like that.
Right.
Really just enjoy chopping up shop and, you know, talking hoop and stuff like that. You know, I enjoy recruiting a lot more. I do. There again, I think, you know, it's probably with my age right now, I'm recruiting a lot of young athletes that their parents are my age, you know, so that's a different dynamic, you know, with the recruiting that it's hard to admit as you get older, you enjoy that stuff, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, it's a different relationship builder for me. You know, I've really enjoyed that. You know, 20 years ago, I knew you had to recruit. You know, you have to be good, you know, and get good athletes and, you know, stuff like that, and to be successful individually as a coach. But I actually really enjoy building the relationships, you know, more and more as I get older with these young kid or athletes. I got to stop saying kids. I really enjoy that. You know, I kind of look at myself as kind of a, you know, kind of a dying breed, you know. I think, you know, you get a little more valuable as you get older in women's basketball as a male. Okay. If you do things the right way. And I'm kind of embracing that role as I get older, you know, just finding different ways to be good at, again, like I said, the recruiting part of it. Just finding different ways to relate to the players that you have on your roster as you get older. You know, they look at you a little bit differently now. I've been enjoying that, you know, quite a bit more. And I joke about it, but it is true. You know, I'm not nearly as serious. I'm not nearly as a hard ass. I'm still pretty demanding and want things done the right way, but I've loosened up a lot. You know, probably it's just because I appreciate being in the game as long as I have and being at the different spots that I have been and feeling very fortunate, more thankful. But man, I just enjoy the things that I thought were kind of burdensome, early on in my career, a lot more. Just the daily interactions with your staff. If you work with a great staff, I'm the only male on staff here at Wyoming Women's Basketball, and I hope it stays that way. I just love it. I love being the guy, to talk different things.
I teach in an elementary school, Ryan, so I get it.
I just, there's so many different things that I'm really enjoying later in my career that, I probably didn't enjoy as much as I did early on. The things that I still love to do and, obsessively watch film, I did that to, probably because I had to and needed to learn a lot early in my career. Now I just, really, really enjoy it. Just the so many different creative things in basketball that, is changing and coming our way. The athleticism of these women that we're trying to defend, how do we stop that, and trying to find something that we can use defensively, help us, trying to find ways to score, watching individual film with players and what's going to work for this type of kid, there I did it again, said kid, how work with this player, but, that was a great question. I've never really been asked that or thought about it, but there's some deep thoughts there by Ryan Larson that, it's kind of revealing how much I really enjoy coaching.
Yeah, no, I like it. And I got a couple things that based off of what you said to kind of follow up on. So one was you talked a little bit about how the recruiting part of it has changed as you've gotten older and you've shifted from being more of a contemporary of your players to being more of a contemporary of your players' parents. But when you think about just how recruiting has changed, whether it's the impact of COVID or just how it's changed over the last, let's say, 15 years of your career, what would you point to and say is different from maybe what you were doing 15 years ago?
I'd say the biggest thing, and, I've learned this over time, and, a lot of people say it, early on, but I think it's the best policy anywhere. I'm just upfront and honest and as straight shooter as I can be, I think a part of that is so important anymore, with being able to transfer, whenever you want. It seems like how many ever times you want, I really want whoever comes to the University of Wyoming to, really know what they're getting into. And we're not going to try to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. I think that's the best way to go about it anymore. Early on, it was impress, schmooze, tell them what they want to hear, or what they, what's best for the athlete, stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. There's still a lot of schmoozing, and impressing. But when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of it, I want those people who we're recruiting to know what we're really about. That nothing's promised. All right. Come January here in Laramie, Wyoming, there's going to be some days where it's pretty darn miserable when the wind's blowing 40, and the sun's not out and it's cold. Okay. I want them to know that, I want them to know, the closest shopping mall from Laramie is in, 40 miles away in Cheyenne. And we're not trying to hide that fact, what they're getting into. We're going to coach you hard. We're going to be demanding. We're going to hold you really accountable. All right. And you're going to be a team first player. We don't tolerate selfishness. Okay. All that stuff. And a lot of people say it in the recruiting world. They might say that stuff, but then they'll let it slide when it gets to the program. But we hold our athletes accountable into those expectations, and so it's not a shock when they do get here. All right, they know what they're getting into. Yeah, I'd say that's the biggest thing that comes to my mind right away to answer your question there.
Talk about identifying players and just going through the process of recruiting there at Wyoming. What does that look like? It's just from start to finish, how you get your initial list of names, and then how you sort of winnow that list down to the people you eventually bring onto campus, and then clearly the girls that you make offers to.
Yeah, it starts with need. You know, obviously, that's biggest thing that we're looking for, right? You know, out of current roster, what you got coming up, what you might be losing. We like to recruit regionally first and foremost. You know, we're going to look Wyoming, bordering states, upper Northwest, Midwest a little bit. You know, we've done well in those areas. And kind of after that, if you've looked at our roster, we got a done pretty well with our international players, here at Wyoming. But we're running a few teams that, runs pure motion basketball, that I'm aware of, or that I've probably coached against. And I don't want people to get confused with, pure motion that we run around like chickens with our heads cut off. We're not doing that by any means. And there's so many different actions to what we do. A lot of stagger screens, a lot of flares, a lot of back screens, a lot of single pin down screens. Fill eight spots on the floor, all right, within our motion. And there's a lot going on there. So skill and IQ are probably the two things that, we really, really try to hone in on, players that we recruit to fit our motion. Skill is probably the easier of the two to identify. When it comes to evaluating a player, IQ, is tough to evaluate. You got to watch them play quite a bit to figure out exactly, how high their basketball IQ is. Still haven't figured that part out. This far into my career, sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I don't. And, that's beautiful thing about coaching. You're always learning there. But as coaches, we got to take a lot of the blame there too. If we're not getting our athletes to do what we want them to do offensively and defensively, we got to take a big look in the mirror too and figure out how can we get them to figure it out. How can we get them to be successful? So obviously not going to put it back on the players there completely. I think the biggest thing also, anymore, man, and I've been thinking about this for a couple of years now, man, if you can really find and recruit kids and get them to your athletes, to get them to your program that can create their own shots anymore, you're going to have a good team, and it's not just creating a shot at one level, getting to the rim or 3-point line, pull up jumpers. Some of these players are really good. And if you can find a recruit that can create their own shot at two different levels and sometimes three different levels, holy smokes, you got a darn good player there. That's one thing that we're really, paying a lot more attention to, is can this athlete create their own shot, and get their own bucket? Because if you can, especially with the style that we play motion-wise, pretty tough to guard at times.
How?
I didn't get into talking on the defensive end there because that's a completely different conversation. How much time you have, Mike? When I start talking defense, that's a greater subject. So,
I understand. Yeah. I completely understand. There's a lot that goes into being a good defensive player, but you could probably if you could figure out a way to just measure a player's motor, you'd probably have that'd probably take you to about 85% of their defense, right? There's obviously some things and reads that they got to make, but man, if you could accurately evaluate a player's motor on the defensive end as a high school player, man, you'd have a bag of gold right there.
Yeah, You know, I'm glad you brought that up, and it's more and more difficult too. The longer I'm in this profession is, you know, finding high motor kids who, you know, I'm not implying that, you know, there's laziness out there, but there's certainly a difference in, you know, the effort young kids play with, and you know this from high school levels, the youth levels, AU to college, and I don't care what level at college, it's different. And be perfectly honest there too, you know, how many coaches have you come across, you know, listening to or on your own podcast or reading or whatever, and they always say our number one thing is we recruit effort, you know, people that play hard.
Right.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know, yeah, that's right up there in our priority list too, but still miss on it, you know, still miss on it. And I'd like to get that one figured out, because that one, you know, that one cuts me pretty deep when we miss there, where we didn't evaluate, you know, their effort and their motor. Yeah, because you're 100% right. You can have some of the greatest schemes defensively, all right, greatest system defensively. It's still not going to work if you don't have athletes that compete and have big-time motors on the defensive end.
And I think too, right, when you jump up, as you said, when you jump up a level, then the intensity of everything that's required of you goes up from a physical standpoint, from a mental standpoint, and just from a time standpoint, everything that's required.
Time standpoint.
Of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's the biggest adjustment I think, you know, athletes have from high school to college is understanding how much time is put in. And that's not just the 20 hours CARA, right, that we're allowed to work with them.
Right.
You really want to be good, you got to put time in on your own, in the gym, asking to watch film with your coaches outside, you know, just, you know, maybe getting a practice guy to help you out, you know, strengthen your weak hand, stuff like that. That's the biggest thing that I really think, you know, moving up a level is missed out on anymore. They just don't quite understand. You could talk about it till you're blue in your face.
Right.
You know,
till you experience it, right?
Yeah, you can. You can tell them how hard it is and, you know, how much time you got to put in. But until you experience it themselves, it doesn't equate.
Right.
Sure.
And then you're trying to get them to – when you're trying to get them to understand it, and then you put them in that situation and you just don't know how the kid who maybe had a high motor as a high school player, suddenly they get to college and you have these added demands, and suddenly that desire or that love or whatever it is that turns somebody's motor on just isn't quite revving at the same speed. And it's interesting, again, as you see how kids go from, you know, from one situation, one environment to another. And it's, again, we're all human beings, right? So
we're
you never know what you're getting.
You don't. And, you know, a lot of those athletes, you know, they're that much better. They're that much talented where they can get away talent-wise.
Yeah, true.
You know?
True.
You know, that just doesn't – you know, they were so darn talented that, you know, they made it look easy, you know, and it kind of looked like they did have a big time motor and were playing hard because they made it look so easy. That
us slow guys with a jump shot can't really relate to that, right?
That's exactly right. I had to work my ass off to get in your shot, you know.
Yep. But,
you know, that's a very interesting topic there that, you know, I think, you know, man, every college coach has had or is having, or it's a lot going on there for sure.
No question. All right. Tell me a little bit about the transition for you from coaching on the men's side. And obviously as a man playing basketball growing up and being around teams of male players and making the transition to coaching women. And first of all, how does it happen? And then secondly, Were there adjustments? What did you like about it? What was different about it? Just talk a little bit about the transition.
Yeah. Easily the best decision I've made, you know, professionally, for a lot of reasons. Going back to my one of my best friends, Travis Traphagen, you know, that helped me get he's helped me get a few jobs, this guy. Helped me get the graduate assistant's job at Augustana. He was a GA for name is Ryan Williams. He was at Wayne State in Wayne, Nebraska. And he was taking over the women's basketball program at the University of South Dakota as they went from Division II to Division I. And, you know, honestly, you know, when I was on the men's side, I kind of palled around with a lot of the women's coaches and got to know quite a few of them, male and female. Which I would think is, you know, a little bit different, you know, and so, but I just like basketball. I like coaching. I like coaches. You know, like I said, I still talk to tennis and wrestling coaches here at Wyoming that, you know, think, you know, get basketball ideas, you know, so therefore had a lot of friends on the women's side of collegiate basketball. When Ryan Williams, who's now the head coach at Colorado State, went to University of South Dakota, you know, he didn't really have anybody, kind of in his pocket to, you know, go to South Dakota with him. He had his current assistant at Wayne, you know, and I won't say he wasn't connected, but, you know, knowing Traphagen from his GA at Wayne State, and I'd known Ryan. I had worked a couple camps for him down at Wayne State, and so we were quite friendly. Ryan asked Travis if he thought I'd be interested, and, you know, we got to talking about it, and, you know, I just, whatever reason, I can't really think back to, you know, what my specific reason was. Maybe it was, hey, it's a Division I opportunity. You know, maybe that's what it was, you know, at that point in my life where I'm like, hey, like, could be a good opportunity to get to Division I and jump, just because, you know, I was really starting to understand how hard it is in the men's side, and not that it's any easier in the women's side. It's not, you know, to get jobs and advance and move on. It's equally hard on both sides. So I thought that was, you know, some of my decision, but the other reason is, you know, and I talked about it, I had a lot of friends on the women's side when I was on the men's side of basketball, and I thought it was just a kind of a different lifestyle, you know, probably a little bit more laid back. I still think it's a better way of life. You know, I really do. I enjoy the coaching a lot more, you know, someday, you know, again, I'm still stubborn. You know, if you asked our current team right now, Wyoming, they're like, yeah, Larson, he can be a pretty good SOB, you know, still hold them really accountable, but I just don't think I'm nearly on edge every single day, you know, coaching women as I was men. You know, maybe that was the environment that I was in at the time, but it seemed like you had to coach angry a lot, and that's not me. You know, that's not my personality. Okay. The other thing about, you know, the game of basketball, women's basketball, I really do think, and I want people who's listening to this, and you, Mike, the same way, please don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, you really need to put women basketball players in position to score a lot more so than men, just because without the athleticism, all right? Because, you know, there's just not that many Caitlin Clarks and Paige Beckers, you know, and Angel Reese is around, you know, that can – Caitlin Clark can shoot from the logo whenever she wants, you know, stuff like that. Okay. Obviously it's getting a little easier as I talked about it a lot, you know, recruiting kids that can go create their own shot. It's getting a lot better as kids get, you know, better as basketball players, more athletic, stronger, faster, you know, all that stuff. But I really do believe, you know, the coaching style fits me, and that, you know, I've always been a sucker for motion basketball. And that's what motion basketball is, you know, is creating shots for your players. And that really, really intrigued me about women's basketball. And that's kind of the story how I got into it. And, you know, I've never looked back. I've just really, man, enjoyed it. It's been a fantastic change for me. And I really do like the relationships a lot more. I do. I think it's, you know, more enjoyable, you know, from just fits my personality a lot more, you know. And I may catch some heat for saying this story, but, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, to the reason I like saying that, you know, it's more enjoyable for me. You know, I never forget my first job out of grad school was at Jamestown College in Jamestown, North Dakota. It's now Jamestown University. When I got hired at Jamestown, I was the assistant men's basketball coach, head men's golf coach, head women's golf coach, and sports information director, making $23,000, and I had arrived, Mike. I made it.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. You got to ride. You got to ride around the golf cart as the golf coach. That's a good gig.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody loves that job.
Yeah, I was there 2 months. All of 2 months. That's a different story. Not going to go there. But meeting the team the first day in Jamestown College was really good. When I got hired there, they were the number one team in the nation the entire year, and got upset in the national tournament. But I was meeting the team, and, you know, talking to the 7th, 8th, 9th player, you know, on the team, and, you know, hey, so what is it you want to do when you're done and graduate? Oh, I want to go play overseas. You know, I'm going to go play overseas. No, you're not. I'm sorry. You know,
right?
Not realistic. You know? And that that was, you know, I use that as an example. You know, that you know, kind of fits my personality, where I just, you know, think females are a lot more realistic. All right. We had a young lady at Wyoming this year that could have went on and played, you know, overseas, you know, for and done well for a couple of years. But you know what? Hey, I got my MBA. All right. I'm ready to start life. Let's go live. Okay. That fits me. And I don't know what that explains about why I like women's basketball a little bit more than men's basketball, why I enjoy it more. I don't know why, but I always go back to that story and that conversation of, why I like it. Maybe you can make sense of it for me.
It sounds like maybe you don't have to fight egos as much.
That's exactly it. Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's, yeah, you're coaching. You're not fighting egos. And you're not dog cussing guys every single day. You know, it's known fact, you know, females are pleasers much more than males. All right. Therefore I'm not coaching angry every darn day. All right. Even though I still get angry probably every day, it's not all of 2.5 hours of practice. Yeah. But you're 100% right. Not dealing with egos nearly as much. Yeah.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. I think in my experience, so I've never coached a female team at the high school level, but I've coached both my daughters, and so, you know, I had experience coaching girls. And one of the things that I liked the most about those experiences has been just the camaraderie, that if you can get the chemistry right, and again, that's not to say that it always goes right, because I've heard stories from people that have coached where you get in a situation where it doesn't go well, and then it can maybe not be the best situation. But I've been pretty fortunate in that the teams that I've coached, you know, the girls' teams that I've coached have gotten along really well and developed a bond that I would say is probably much stronger than the bonds of teams that I've coached of males. And I think that that's something that I've enjoyed that part of it in terms of watching them develop friendships within the team and really kind of come together as a group beyond just the basketball floor, but really truly becoming friends. And to me, that was always kind of a rewarding part. And obviously doubly rewarding because my daughters were a part of those experiences. Yeah. But at the same time, I think just as a coach, when you see your players coming together, not only as a basketball team, but also just as people off the floor, to me, that was always one of the more rewarding parts of coaching my daughter's teams.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm not going to, you know, follow up with, you know, examples that you just said, just because, yeah, you hit it on the head. And, you know, there again, going back to, you know, getting older and getting softer, you know, and appreciating that stuff more and more. Is really what it's about, and you know what makes this profession really, really rewarding.
Yeah, it's funny how we mature, and the things that maybe were important to us or that made us angry when we were 23, 24, 25, things that frustrated us, like those things kind of melt away. And I think you sort of reorient your priorities, just, I mean, in life, obviously, but then as a coach, I think too, you just tend to look at things differently, and you start to figure out and learn and understand what's important. And for you, as you're going through your career and you've been an assistant at a bunch of different places, obviously at some point you probably have in the back of your mind that, hey, I'd love to be a head coach someday. What were you kind of doing to prepare for that day when you were going to become a head coach? Did you have a way of sort of cataloging, recording, collecting ideas, notes, film, things that you thought would be important for you when you eventually became a head coach? Did you have the old fashioned 3-ring binder? How'd you go about just kind of keeping the things that you wanted to keep front of mind as you were preparing to become a head coach?
Yeah, I kind of a pack rat, and, you know, keep a lot of stuff in the 3-ring binders. You know, we have cleared them out over the years, but really just kind of being astute in watching and studying, you know, people I've worked with, you know, coached against, you know, and I think that, you know, probably has a lot to do with, you know, my passion for history, you know, learning history and studying it, you know, kind of taking note of, I really like that, or, if I ever get a chance, I should never do that. You know what I mean? You know, don't handle a situation that way. You know, I'd like to think I'm, you know, a fairly observant and, you know, person that can recall events and stuff like that. But I very, very fortunate to work for a lot of really good coaches. But two I will point out as, you know, I probably got better as a coach with that, you know, really encouraged me to be a lot more outgoing and hands-on, you know, in coaching and practice, you know, having different ideas, if it's offensively, defensively, you know, just not staying so close to the vest and stuff like that, you know, taking chances. You know, I never forget, again, going back to the University of South Dakota, working for Ryan Williams, and he sat me down and, you know, I want and need you to start thinking like a head coach in practice, you know, and that will serve you better when you do get your chance. And man, those were meant a lot at the time, you know, it gave me so much confidence. And it served me well, it served me really well for when I did become a head coach. Because, you know, I just, you know, thought I was prepared. Was I prepared? Are you really prepared to become a head coach? No, you are not. All right. Did I think I was prepared? Yeah. You know, but was I? No. All right. But it served me really well, you know, a lot of confidence. And again, thinking outside the box and, you know, I loved that team my first year at South Dakota School of Mines. Loved them to death, man. They played so hard and gave me everything they had, but, you know, pretty limited. And, you know, if I had a whiteboard and could draw up what we did offensively for you right now, you would laugh. You would absolutely laugh. And my assistant at the time was a very good player. She played at South Dakota State, and, you know, just, you know, great coach, great player. I sat her down and showed her what we were going to do, and she goes, "Ryan, we're never going to score." I'm like, "Well, Kenny, this is what we have, though. This is all we're capable of doing, you know."
That's funny.
And that as simple as it was innovative, because it was all we could do with the talent that we had, you know. Again, nothing against those women that I had there, and they would probably admit that they were, you know, pretty limited talent wise. You know, we did eventually make some baskets, you know, out of it. It helped us, and we were able to continue as we got better at it, add more and more and more, you know, things to it, and, you know, motion wise and stuff like that. And as they got better at play as players and, you know, stuff like that, we were able to continue to add and, you know, kind of developed our own little motion offense out of it that we used for a number of years at South Dakota School of Mines. Yeah, you know, Amy Williams, who also worked at the University of South Dakota, who's at head coach at the University of Nebraska right now, major influence in me as far as just putting a lot of trust in me of being able to coach, because as again, I'm sure you're aware, you know, not every situation is that way when you're assistant. You know, you don't sometimes, unfortunately, you're not able to coach a whole lot.
Right.
And those people really were great to me in those regards of not holding me back and trusting me to coach and get the team better. And so I really owe those guys a lot to helping me become a head coach. And like the old joke, yeah, are you ever ready? No. All right, you're not. You certainly learn more in your first year than you ever will in your entire coaching career. I was pretty darn prepared because of those two. Yeah.
What was the hardest part or the most eye-opening part to you about being a head coach? Maybe something that you didn't realize went along with the head coaching position when you were an assistant. You kind of looked at it like, you know, whatever, my head coach has got to do X, Y, or Z or make this decision. I could do that without any problem. That's going to be easy, no stress. Just what was something that was maybe surprising to you or hard that you kind of didn't anticipate?
Two things always immediately come to mind. One being, and yeah, you took it for granted. I took it for granted completely, but time, you know, as an assistant, you know, you have your duties, and like on my desk, I have my list of things, daily duties I want to get done, long, you know, midterm, long-term stuff like that. And you pretty much stick to those tasks. As a head coach, you know, I still try to have those duties and lists and, you know, stay on schedule or whatever, but it's impossible. It doesn't happen, you know, with a player popping in, you know, wanting to chat, your AD popping in, or, you know, media interview, you know, whatever it may be, booster, you know, just randomly wanting to shoot the breeze, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, time was the biggest thing. You know, learn to take work home with me and be efficient at home without, you know, overworking. That was the biggest thing that I took for granted. And, you know, like you said, you kind of poo-pooed it with the rest of when I was assistant before becoming a head coach. And the second one, and, you know, I'd like to think I'm good at it now, but, you know, it takes you a long time to get good at it and even get comfortable with it. But a really good friend of mine told me right away, you know, one of the biggest skills you have to be good at in becoming a head coach is you have to get comfortable having uncomfortable conversations. And yeah, that took a bit. You know, it really did. You know, probably avoided having conversations with, if it's your staff or players or administration, than I should have had early on. You know, does that make sense?
No, it does.
Yeah. You know, especially with your players. And it doesn't have to be difficult conversations. It just, you know, has to be a conversation, you know, to maybe at some point get to a difficult part of the conversation, if that makes any sense. You know, that I wished I would have taken, you know, paid a lot more attention to that than I did early on in, I'd say, my first couple of years for sure of being head coach. I wished I would have done a lot better job of that, paid a lot more attention to it.
Was it just experience, or was it an experience in the terms of number of reps, or was it an experience where, man, I wish I would have had this tough conversation because now what I should have said kind of came back and bit me?
Both. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, for sure, both. Because that certainly happened. You know, and that's just, you know, being a red blood American boy, you know, there again, you know, I never questioned any head coaches that I worked for. You know, I don't want to make it think like that. That's what I'm getting at here. But when you're an assistant and you're with your head coach having one of those uncomfortable conversations, you know, maybe you're thinking more of the player and like, man, I wouldn't have said it that way. Or, geez, you know, poor player, you know, that type of deal.
Right.
And probably right. Missed the point on it there, you know. And not really understanding, you know, what the message was coming from the head coach, or, you know, how important that conversation needed to be. You know, I wished I would have paid a lot more attention to that, because it would have helped me. It would have served me a lot better my first couple of years for sure. You know, the other thing is, who really likes confrontation?
Right.
I kind of scoff at the fact where I hear people say, you know, not afraid of confrontation. Oh, boy, okay. I'm not sure if I believe that.
Those people are wired. Those people, if that's true, they got to be wired differently than most of us, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I just don't think most human beings really enjoy confrontation. I think that had a lot to do with it, because it's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's the exact same, you know, conversation that my friend told me right away, that you got to get comfortable with it, you know, because it's, nobody enjoys it. So, yeah, those were the things that really set me back. I would say not set me back, you know, career, I'm just, opened my eyes right away. Yeah.
How long did it take you into that, your tour of duty at the School of Mines, to be able to feel like you had things in place from a basketball philosophy standpoint? And obviously, like you talked about earlier, you got to get some recruits in there that can do maybe more than what your first group was capable of doing. How long into that process was it before you felt like you had things kind of where you hoped they would be when you first got the job? The answer is probably never, right? Because you're never satisfied. But
yeah, you're never satisfied. Yeah, I understand the premise of your question, and I'd probably say year four, you know, year three, maybe at the end of that year, you know, year four or around there. Where, and I'm going to base it on playing the way that I wanted our teams to play. Does that make sense? Would that work for you?
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. I think when you start talking about, when you look out on the floor, and you, to me, the answer to the question is sort of, you look out on the floor and you see a team that fits what your vision is of kind of what you want your team to look like. And that's not to say that you're going undefeated, but
yes,
the team is playing the way that you want them to be playing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's year three or four for sure. I think we you know, established what our identity was offensively, you know, and defensively. And we're able to start playing that way. And, you know, that was, those were fun days, you know, those really were, you know, and I'm not going to, results aside, you know, I don't even know what my record was at South Dakota School Mines, but I know it wasn't, you know, anything fantastic. Hard job, really hard job, you know, but I learned more there than anywhere I've ever been. Obviously, well, I should have, because I was the head coach, you know, but finding ways to be innovative, you know, different again, you know, different recruiting stuff, you know, because all there is engineering and science there, you know, we that's all you could recruit to, you know, kids that wanted to study engineering or go into the medical field. Pretty limited, you know, very limited. To get to a point where we had our identity offensively and defensively, but yet still having an open mind of playing zone, you know, pressing, you know, which kind of goes against my, you know, my MO, you know, outside of my comfort zone a little bit, you know, had an assistant there that, you know, man, really taught a really good 2-3 zone. And he gave me so much crap, you know, first couple of years, you know, we had that thing in that, you know, we'd go zone, you know, and the opponent would make 1-3 and we were out of it, you know, never played it again. The rest of the game, that, you know, getting to a comfort zone of, you know, doing all kinds of different things defensively. You know, our defensive package there was, man, and we did all kinds of different things from, you know, again, 2-3 zone, trapping out of it, you know, trapping a second or third side, you know, defending ball screens multiple ways, switching like screens, switching all screens, you know, doubling the post multiple different ways. I mean, we were doing all kinds of different things defensively. You know, we were really good defensive teams, you know, back then. That was a lot of fun, you know. So yeah, year 3 or 4, I would say, to answer your question and stop rambling about, you know, different things that we did. But
how'd you teach that stuff in practice? So you do multiple looks defensively. What does it look like in a practice setting? Are you doing that out of small sided games? Are you doing that 5-on-5? Is it breakdown, a combination? Just how do you go about teaching that to your players?
Yeah, pretty much all of it. You know, I'm a big Don Meyer fan, you know, huge Don Meyer. And, you know, anything Don Meyer says is gold, I think, you know. And I struggled with, you know, being a drill coach, you know, what quote I'm talking about, versus just being a, you know, basketball coach. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I love drills, you know, especially defensive drills. And we did, man, a ton of them, you know. But I thought it was really beneficial for us because, again, we were pretty limited athletically, you know, basketball-wise at South Dakota Mines. Loved those kids to death and played their tails off. But with what we were able to recruit to, you know, pretty darn limited. So, I mean, we had to drill a lot. And we had to be really good defensively. We had to maximize their athleticism by, you know, having perfect footwork defensively, having perfect closeouts, you know. Yeah, you know, we did a different closeout drill every single day. All right, every single day we were doing, if not one, maybe multiple closeout drills. If it was just a 1-on-1 or a 2-on-2, you know, to a 3-on-3 closeout, a lot of small-sided games, especially offensively, you know, that we would tie in defensively. I think I kind of found a balance between, you know, the Don Meyer quote of, you know, don't be so much a drill coach as a basketball coach. We're thinking of and stealing, discovering, you know, good defensive drills that were also very competitive, all right, to get our kids to compete and get that sense of will of winning. But yeah, we if I were to send you a picture of some of my practice plans from South Dakota School of Mines, where, you know, you see skip path closeouts for 2 minutes, and then, you know, ranger drill closeout for 4 minutes, and then another drill for 2 minutes, and, you know, you probably think I was nuts, you know, just as detailed and timely as I had it, just to, you know, squeeze those drills in. But, you know, again, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, really wondered if I, you know, too much drilling, and started to run to that when I came to the University of Wyoming, where never been to a place where, and I, Gerald Mattinson hired me here, who is, retired a year ago. Never been to a place where they play so much 5-on-5 in practice in my entire life, you know. So that was a pretty big shock, from doing what I was doing to coming here, where, you know, it's not saying that we don't do any drills or skill work or anything like that, or just roll the balls out and play. Don't get me wrong there, but man, we play a whole bunch here, and that's where I, you know, started scratching my head, man. Maybe we didn't play enough, you know. And I wasn't a basketball coach; I was just being a drill meister. Yeah, I rambled on from your question there a little bit, but we did it all, Mike. We did it all, and I liked it though. That I thought it was very, very beneficial for the situation that we are in at, again, you know, pretty limited situation as far as recruiting goes, and, you know, making the most out of what you had. Yeah.
Are you a stick to the 2 minutes no matter what's going on in the drill, or if things aren't going the way you want it, you run over the drill? I'm always curious about how coaches approach that.
You know, I changed there early on. Yeah, absolute stickler. You know, and I probably did that because, you know, I read in one of my thousands of coaching books that I read, of whatever book I read that month or year, about whatever coach it was, you know, sticking to the minute exactly, you know, being that detailed. Later loosened up quite a bit where, hey, you know what, maybe, you know, good or bad, you know, the good being, hey, we're doing really well at this drill, you know, let's keep it going. You guys are having fun. You know, we're getting better. Let's keep going here. Do it again. Or maybe I like this. I like what we're doing here. Let's keep going. Or, you know, unfortunately, the opposite of, hey, we're not getting this. you're just playing out the clock here. All right. You're just watching the clock and waiting for this to get done. You know, we're going to redo this again, you know, or put, you know, 2 more minutes up, 5 minutes, whatever it may be, you know, that type of deal. Yeah, really loosen it up there quite a bit. That did help me for sure. You know, I that's big, I think, in coaching, to be flexible in your practice plans. Time-wise, whatever it is, or, you know, sometimes you just have to set your athletes up for success every once in a while, you know. If you've tried this drill 3 days in a row and it's been trashed 3 days in a row,
it might be time to go a different direction, right?
Yeah, something different. It's not working. Yep. It's not going to work, you know. There's other ways I could describe setting your athletes up for success, but, you know, that's the biggest one that comes to my mind. Yeah. Yep.
What did you learn during your time as a head coach that made you a better assistant when you got to Wyoming?
I now know what the head coach is going through.
Yep.
That, I'm such a better assistant coach now. Let's go back to having an uncomfortable conversation with the player. Before I was a head coach and assistant, you know, I wouldn't have said it that way, or, yeah, man, being a little harsh here, you know, something like that, or, oh, he or she didn't deserve that. Now I know, yeah, you know, it's probably warranted, you know, and there's definitely a reason why. Man, the different things you have to think of, you know, as the game is going on, you know, and it's not just basketball wise, all right? It's what you say, what you do to players. You know, they've turned it over for the third time, you know, and they're still playing hard and their body language is good. You know, probably not the time to rip into them, right? If they turn it over for the third time and not playing real hard and their body language is great, isn't great, then yeah, you know, better get into them, you know, pretty good. You know, I'm such a better assistant coach, you know, understanding what the head coach is going through right now, then that is so invaluable. I had someone tell me, you know, when I was making this decision to go from South Dakota School of Mines to Wyoming, that you'll enjoy it a lot more. You will, because you'll have a greater understanding of what the head coach is going through, and it's your job is going to be easier because of that. And he was exactly right in those words. And I like it a lot more, man. Not just the fact that I'm a better assistant coach, but knowing what they're going through, it's again made me better as a coach. And hopefully I have served, you know, Gerald when he hired me in his three years here, and Heather this past year. Hopefully my experience as a head coach has served them well.
Talk a little bit about, we touched on it earlier, just very briefly, about being the only male on your staff. Talk about, A, just what that's like from a professional standpoint, working environment, what you like about it, and then, two, what value you feel you bring as a male in terms of a different perspective, or just, again, being obviously a different gender. So just talk a little bit about those two things.
I like being a male with the current staff that we have together, just because we're such good friends, and you know, we really can talk about anything. And I mean that, we really can talk about anything, and it's sounds weird and immature, but man, it's fun.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It's fun, you know, because we're tight. You know, we're really tight, all of us. You know, and it's that makes, you know, me being the only male, I just it's a fun environment. You know, it's really fun. And I kind of, you know, they kind of asked me, I don't know how to phrase this, but you know. You know, most of the time I don't know, you know, a question a male should know about, you know, let's just say, I don't know about your car. I don't know crap about cars, you know, that type of stuff. But, you know, I enjoy that. That's specific to our staff. And I probably would have, if I didn't enjoy the people I work with so darn much, and we weren't so tight and friendly and care for each other, you know, I'd probably have a different answer. You know, I probably would. Could you repeat the second part of your question?
So the second part is just, as a male, what value does that bring to the staff, just in terms of having a different perspective, maybe in terms of the way you relate to players or coaching style, whatever you think is relevant to that question, if there's anything?
Yeah, I really don't. I'm not sure. You know, I don't have anything that really pops to my head, you know, right away, that is relevant. I think, you know, I'm really glad. It needs to get better. I will admit, you know, it needs to continue to get better. But I really hope to a point where, you know, I don't care if it's men's basketball, you know, but especially in, you know, a female game right now, we start to look at it as gender neutral, you know, shouldn't matter, you know, it really shouldn't matter. And nothing just really pops my mind, Mike, and I'm not going to make anything up to try to sound
smart.
Yeah,
no, that's totally fair. Fair.
Maybe it's, again, getting older. All right. I think it's a little bit easier for me to put my arm around a kid right now and pump them up, you know, love them up, you know. That'd have been harder. It certainly was harder 15 years ago when I first got into women's basketball, you know, at the age of 30. That wasn't nearly as easy. All right. Yeah. But I think being around the game as long as I have now, and being older, you know, I think I'm looked upon and, you know, a lot more trustworthy from our players, you know, our young women right now, to probably have a hard conversation with about whatever it is, you know. And they certainly do that. You know, we've had some pretty good heart to hearts with a lot of our players, you know, over the years, that I don't think they would have, any of the players I would have been coaching, you know, back at South Dakota when I first got into women's basketball, again, at the age of 30, I don't think, or whatever it was, how old I was, 28, whatever, would have come to me to have those conversations. You know, that makes it really pretty special and a lot more enjoyable. And I'm glad that they are confident and comfortable and be able to do that. So, yeah.
No, that makes sense. I mean, again, just from your own maturity level and then from the player perspective, their comfort of coming to someone who's in their late 20s, early 30s versus someone who's in their mid 40s. Clearly, it's a different, they're looking at you in a different way as a person, not necessarily as a basketball coach, but just as a human being.
As
they're
a
looking
human
at
being.
You. Yep. Yeah, they're looking at you as a different, you know, as a different person. I think that makes a lot of sense.
You know, who knows, you know, maybe if I was mature as I am now, back then when I first got in, maybe it'd been different.
Right. Yep. No, I get it. Right. You're 100% right. You know? Yeah, we're all a lot different at again, I'm 53, so I'm a lot different at age 53 than I was at age 28, that's for sure, in terms of what I might have wanted to get into and put out of coaching. And, you know, it's just – I mean, we're just different, and we mature, and I think you tend to see the value, at least, again, I'm speaking for myself, but I think I tend to see the value more in the people at age 53 than I did – when I was in my 20s. In my 20s, it was much more about just about basketball and not necessarily about the people. And I think as I've gotten older, it's become more about the people part of it and less about the basketball. And that's really, I think, how I've personally matured. So,
100%. Yeah. And I like to use the term maturing, you know, maturing is learning and getting better. You know, that's what maturing is.
Absolutely.
When I was younger, you know, it was about winning games, all right, getting the best recruits, and, you know, I'm ashamed to admit it, I was more worried about getting my next job.
It was about the basketball, and it was about you. I mean, I think there's no doubt. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that that's probably how most people are. I mean, it's just, again, as you mature, you tend to grow out of that, and you see the bigger picture, which you can't. You can't always do when you're young, that's for sure.
No doubt.
All right, one final two-part question. Part one, you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Yeah. You talk about like for our team next year, or just kind of in general.
You personally as a coach in your profession. It could be specific to your team. It could just be looking ahead at what, you know, where you are in your career. However you want to approach that. There's no wrong way to approach it.
Yeah. This might sound cliche, you know, but maybe it is, but it's a thought that I, you know, I thought was original, but you know, how a lot of people have New Year's resolutions to, you know, do whatever. You know, I had the thought long, long time ago that, you know, every year my New Year's resolution is just be better than I was the year before. All right. And that, as a person professionally, you know, everything that kind of covers, and, you know, not trying to dodge the question there a little bit, but that, you know, I just, you know, again, I think I said earlier, that's such a fun thing about basketball is you're always learning and you're always, you know, should be getting better. And, you know, I got a chance to be the interim head coach, you know, for 2 months this year, because Heather, our head coach, Coach Ezel, gave birth to her first child a number of weeks early and was in the NICU for that long. And so that made me a better coach again, you know, getting back to that head coaching role, even though I will make a point that it was not my team. It never was my team. It was always Heather's team. But, you know, running the show for those 2 months, you know, really got me better as a coach and saw things differently in a number of different ways. But so how do I get better and improve from that? You know, I've got a lot of thinking to do and a lot of figure, a lot of, you know, things to figure out how I get better from there. But I certainly know it's there. If it's, you know, finding ways to expand our defensive package or our offensive package, or, you know, make it a goal of, man, we only scored on X amount of percent of our baseline inbounds plays, you know, which I call, we got to get that number up, you know, something like that. You know, I will certainly find ways to, you know, improve on professionally, challenge myself there. You know, I think the biggest thing for our team right now is we lost 2 fifth-year seniors this year that, you know, coaches rarely come across. They were young women that were just true professionals of the term of bringing it every day in practice, and tough and getting better. I mean, these two young women's approach to practice was the only reason that we were good while I was running the show for 2 months. I mean, they were just absolute rocks and tremendous leaders. And, you know, we could be as talented, if not even more talented, next year than we were this year after winning 23 games and finishing second in the Mountain West. But my biggest concern and the rest of our coaching staff is, you know, how do we replace those two's toughness, you know, and their approach to the game of basketball every single day. You know, that's going to be a big challenge. That's going to be a really big challenge. And so we are locked in on that right now, how we get that fixed or corrected, or for us ready to go. Sorry, Mike, I rambled so much. I forgot the second part of the question already.
Your biggest joy.
My biggest joy. You know, if you haven't figured it out, and I've talked about it a lot, and, you know, heck, I ain't that old, but 45, you know, I enjoy being around young people so much anymore in this profession, you know, and seeing them get better and reach their goals. wow. It just, you know, again, we've talked about so many different examples, and the last one, you hit the nail on the head where you're worried about winning games, chasing the next job, and you're totally blinded about what's really important, the relationships, you know, and seeing, you know, young people meet their goals, you know, and stuff like that. That's what's really special anymore. I love basketball as much as I did when I, you know, was shooting baskets in the box in my basement, you know, still just live and breathe it, love it, absolutely, and love studying the game, love watching film, love playing practice, love the individual workouts. But, you know, there were some moments this year in the past few years here at Wyoming, and even some, you know, some years at South Dakota Mines, where, you know, some images of smiles and hugs of players are just, you know, absolutely burned into your mind that again, you start to realize what's so important. You know, that's that's what's really fun, you know. And there's, you know, there is, you know, a while maybe where, you know, I knew I always wanted to coach, but maybe, you know, get into administration, you know, later on, you know, at some point in my 40s or 50s or something like that, you know, be a fundraiser or something like that at the college level. You know, I'm done thinking that, you know, I'm going to coach till I retire. That is my new goal. All right. And I've thought that for probably 3 or 4 years now that, yeah, this is, you know, it's not so much that I'm going to choose to get out of coaching, you know, do something different. Nope. That's done. I want to do this until I'm going to retire, you know, when I know it's time to be done. So little side note for you there that, you know, again, tells you how much I love this profession. Again, not just the coaching, but you know, these young people give me a new lease on life. As much fun as they are to be around.
It's well said. And I think, hey, when you're around young people, they help keep you young, and that's what it's all about.
So well
right?
said. Yeah. Yep. You're 100% right.
I think you know, this
has been a blast. You're a great interviewer.
Well, thanks.
You got a great, brand new big fan in me. And I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. I want to give you a chance to share. How can people connect with you, whether you want to share your email or social media or website, whatever you feel comfortable with? And then after you do that, I will jump back in and we'll wrap things up.
Yeah. You know, I get pretty active on Twitter. Would be a good way to get in touch with me. You wouldn't know I'm a coach because I don't have Coach Ryan Larson or Coach Larson. It's just at Ryan, capital R, Larson, capital Larson. One word there. Anybody ever want to get in touch with me, they can go on gowyo.com and, you know, look up my email there. That would, you know, I have no problem sharing that. I'm not going to say it over the podcast because, as you're well aware, Mike, it's kind of a funky email and it's hard to write down. And so just go to, yeah, gowyo.com. And,
hey, you got the most simple Twitter of anybody. You got your actual name. That's pretty good. That's impressive.
But I've had a lot of people ask me, like, you know, right? Yeah. Why don't you have Coach Ryan learn that? I don't know. That's a good question. So maybe I should work on that. But yeah, go to gowild.com, get my email or Twitter. I do have an Instagram account. I think I got one post on there, so that's not worth it. Yeah.
Completely understand. Ryan, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. I truly appreciate your kind words. It means a lot to me and to everyone out there. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.